Hi, I'm Mike Dilk and you're listening to the Relax Back UK show, the show that explores all kinds of health topics relevant to you, your family and your friends. Each week I talk to expert guests from a range of backgrounds to inform and entertain you. So please do join the Relax Back UK family and stay tuned.
Hi, and thank you for joining me on the Relax Back UK show this week. Shortly, I'm off to the Everything Electric show in London, and I'm really looking forward to it. My guest today is Dan Caesar, who essentially runs the whole thing. We talk about loads of stuff. We put a few electric car myths to bed.
Of electric car drivers, I literally know thousands because we have the YouTube channel, because we have the events. I have never met anyone who's actually had an electric car fire in real life, ever.
The fact that electric cars catch on fire all the time being one of the myths that we put to bed. Then we chat about things other than transport. Many different ways of heating and cooling your home. Remember storage heaters? Well, a modern version of them.
Now there's zero emission boilers that basically very modern, very up to date, software driven versions of the same technology.
I really love chatting with Dan and I'm looking forward to the show. It's on March the 28th to 30th. And I have some free tickets to give away. I have 5 pairs of tickets. And to get one of those pairs, all you have to do is be one of the first to email me. My email is mike@relaxbackuk.com. So really worth having. Do send me a message and the first 5 will get the pairs of tickets. So great show. Please do stick around. Thank you. Technically, my guest, Dan Caesar, is CEO of the Fully Charged show, which includes the Everything Electric show. So first of all, I asked him how these two different but kind of very connected things came about.
So Robert Llewellyn, who is Crichton in Red Dwarf and the host of Scrap Heap Challenge, launched the Fully Charged show on YouTube in 2010. So it's a YouTube channel.
Right.
All about cleaner energy and transport. So it's about electric vehicles of all shapes and sizes and home energy and clean energy too. And he decided back in 2010 to launch a YouTube channel about that topic when it was very, very niche indeed. And over time that has grown. And now we not only run a YouTube channel called The Fully Charger, we also have a YouTube channel called The Everything Electric Show. And that has led us in turn to create a series of live exhibitions around the world called Everything Electric.
Right.
So we have Everything Electric London, Everything Electric Australia, Everything Electric Canada, and so on. So we really are trying to help people understand what electric vehicles and clean energy are all about. And hopefully persuade them to the cause.
Very good. All right. So one is coming up. So the London show is fast approaching. When is that?
Yeah, the London show is March 28th, 29th and 30th. So it's the Thursday, Friday, Saturday ahead of Easter Sunday. And it's taking place at XL London. And it's going to be one of the biggest launches we've ever done. And we're approaching everyone we can to come along and enjoy what we term it a festival of electrification, Mike. So there's loads and loads to see and do. It isn't just about cars, but electric cars are quite topical and we have almost everything available. When we first started this a few years ago, it was about 10 electric cars. Now there are literally hundreds from manufacturers that people know and manufacturers that people hadn't heard of 5 years ago.
All right.
Plus there's
I'm coming.
Definitely.
I'm really looking forward to it. But kind of in general, who are you hoping is going to attend? Who is it aimed at?
Well, we're very lucky to have a large audience of our own on YouTube, a large sort of fan base, if you like. We get about 3 million views a month globally. So that's how we've been able to launch this. But we don't want it just to be people who watch the Fully Charged show all the time. We want it to be people who are just starting to look at electric vehicles. At the moment, there is a percentage of the population who are thinking, I think I might, next time I get a car, it might be electric, or maybe I'll get rid of my car and I'll get an electric bike, or maybe I'll look what's beyond my boiler and maybe I'll look at a heat pump and things like that. So it's the people who are really interested in new tech, we would say, are particularly the focused. Don't have to be environmentally minded. A lot of this tech is just better than the tech that's gone before. The fact that it can actually reduce your carbon usage is actually just a bonus really. Although I have to say air pollution is such a serious issue in vehicles and even in your home that actually, by stealth, we do want people to come and buy cleaner and cleaner technologies.
Okay. You mentioned that there's going to be a lot of vehicles to see, electric vehicles. Is there going to be a chance to try them out? Because I've been to Excel, you know, it doesn't appear to be very big to be driving cars around.
That's a great question. Actually, probably the test drive program is one of the jewels of the crown of what we do. So we will be running about 10,000 electric vehicle test drives at Excel on those 3 days. The cars, the great thing about electric cars is they can drive into the hall because there's no pollution coming out of the tailpipe. That you can get into them and then you can drive them out of Excel down the ramp around the local roads and bring them back again. So you can actually have a test drive. And what a lot of our visitors do is they typically come and maybe test drive two or three in one go. Because if you're trying to if you want to try a new car, try an electric car, you're particularly keen to see what the differences are. Most people come back with a big beaming grin, Mike, when they've actually tried it. But actually, rather than going to multiple dealerships across multiple different weekends, they can come and try a few in one go. So it's been incredibly popular part of what we do. So we run the biggest electric vehicle test drive programs in the world. And London's, I think, will be the biggest we've ever held in the Northern Hemisphere. So, for people who want to come and sit in the cars and actually take them out for a spin, it's just a brilliant weekend.
So do you have to liaise with the local traffic? Because, you know, if there's a traffic jam nearby, then, you're kind of snookered, aren't you?
There's a lot of that. There's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes to make sure that kind of all operates smoothly. We're very fortunate that I think we probably have a few hundred cars in total, but on the test drive, there's probably only more like 150 to 200. So in the scheme of things against London traffic, it's not that bad. And Excel actually is, I'm not saying the roads around it are quiet, but it's very different from central London. No. So you will get a good test drive experience and you will come back hopefully informed and maybe even thinking, well, I quite like that one. So that it's an incredibly popular part of what we do.
Right. I'm going to bring my driving license. I'm hoping to try out a few. But I do have a question about electric cars in general that appear to be for sale. Now, where I'm coming from, I've never bought a new car in my life. I'm not actually that interested in cars. And I haven't got a lot of money. That's part of the reason why I've never bought a new car. Now, a lot of the electric vehicles that seem to be for sale are smart, big, expensive, powerful, and, you know, sort of statement sort cars, which couldn't be anything further from me or kind of what I need or want in a car. You know, I just want to take the kids to school. So I don't know. There seems to be a gap in what people like me might want as an electric car and what's available.
Well, the irony is we're not really car guys either. I mean, the car is, you know, a strange product. People get very emotional about it. Sometimes they even name their cars, don't they, Mike? And some people have got more money than others and they can afford to have one or two, you know, expensive cars. A lot of people don't have that option. So actually, we think if we move away from combustion engine vehicles and we have the same number of vehicles at the end of it, when we move to electric, we probably failed to grasp the opportunity. So at our show, you can test ride everything from, you know, one wheels to scooters to bikes as well as trikes and things like that, as well as cars. But on the subject of cars, what's interesting in the car market is that it has become quite hard to run a car company and they're all looking to be as profitable as possible. And so a lot of the cars so far that have come in out in the electric sphere are more of that kind of mid or upper level in terms of cost. So newer car companies are now coming to fill that vacuum. You know the old phrase, nature abhors a vacuum. Well, the car companies haven't been really interested in selling you a cheap car. They want to sell you a bigger, more expensive car, you know, generally speaking. But actually, no, those cheaper cars are coming. We're going to have quite a lot of those there. And also things like used cars. You know, the used electric car market now is a really, really interesting place. So you can access cars. And also there's car sharing. You know, you might be in a situation where you just want to use a car from occasion to occasion. So all of those options are represented at our show.
Okay. All right. Secondhand cars, you say? You've got people peddling secondhand cars. You've got secondhand car dealers there, have you?
Well, we're going to have a pre-loved electric car area at our show. So there will be some secondhand ones that you can get hold of as well. And it depends. I've driven electric since 2015. And let's be kind to some of the early electric vehicles. Their range was often more like 100 to 150 miles. Now, getting one of those in the secondhand market, I had a BMW i3, I've had a Nissan Leaf. You know, they're actually really, really good cars, but they're more runaround cars, you know, if you're doing relatively short journeys. I think on average, people do about 7,000 miles a year. So actually, if you're at that kind of lower end of the spectrum, then that's very easy. But now there are so many electric cars with 200, 300, 400 mile range. Actually, it's much, much easier to get one of those, even if you're a commuter who travels long distances. I typically do 25 to 30,000 miles a year, and I've driven an electric car for almost 10 years now with no problem. So, we try and represent all different things. But yeah, there will be some bargains to look out for. And fundamentally, if you don't want a car, you know, we also promote public transport. We promote, you know, as I said, micro mobility and all these other different vehicles as well.
I want to come on to ask you about micro mobility in a moment, but before that, it seems that the government has been sort of pushing to get us to think electric cars go down that route in the past, but some of those ways of making sort of the great British public react and behave. So some of these bigger kind of levers that government can pull, the policy, I suppose, really government policy to get us to move one way, doesn't seem to be going the way of encouraging us to use electric vehicles to some extent. You know, so this idea of, because there was a grant to get an electric car a while ago, that's gone. And then there's this idea of VAT when you charge your car. Your electric car, if you don't do it at home, you know, the VAT is actually quite expensive, so it costs a lot more if you're not lucky enough to be able to plug your car in your driveway, or you know, that sort of thing. So what's going on there? What's the government up to, and what and why?
Well, I think I would diplomatically give the current government a sort of C- really in terms of its homework around electric vehicles. It's certainly done more, I think, to deter people than encourage people. And to put it into context, Mike, this is a global phenomenon. This is a global transition. In Norway, for example, in January, 92.1% of new car sales were pure electric. So Norway's quite a wealthy country, I grant you, but actually they've had a set of stimuli in place that have really transformed that market to almost
it's
pure
an electric. Oil-rich company as well, isn't it? So you just thought, oil if rich. Anyone's going to not bother, it might be them.
Yeah, ironically, it's very, very oil rich. But you do have lots of countries across Europe now who are going through the 20%, 30%, 40% mark month on month of new car sales are electric. But then interestingly, the UK has kind of hovered around the 15% mark for a couple of years because the car grant you mentioned, the plug-in car grant as well, and other things have been watered down or taken away. So it has slowed down. Ironically, we do a lot of work in Australia as well. And about 3 years ago, their electric vehicle uptake was about 1%. As of now, last month, it was almost 10%. Ours at the same period was already at about 15%, and it's pretty much stayed there due to those kind of regressive policies in the UK. I mean, I think also the UK is going through some tougher economic conditions than most of the countries I've mentioned as well. So there is that. But yeah, there's certainly more can be done because it is a global trend. It will gain pace. And as I understand it, other manifestos are available and other parties are saying they're going to sort of ramp the policies and subsidies back up for electric cars if they get into power in the future as well.
But so, I mean, are the powers that be, you know, are they stubborn? Are they just a bit thick? Are they under political pressure? Have they been, you know, bribed? Are there envelopes full of brown envelopes full of used money been slipped? What's going on? Because it seems like a fairly obvious thing to do. I'm not the smartest guy, but it seems a fairly obvious thing to do.
Well, it's a huge global trend. It trumps politics. It's bigger than politics. It's the way the world is going to go. And we can either put our fingers in the ears and say, la, 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 it's not happening, or we can kind of embrace that. And as a country, I think we should embrace it because there are some huge economic opportunities for us in terms of making cars here, for example, having the workforce to do that, you know, has huge health implications by having much less in the way of emissions, you know, on our urban and suburban areas. So I think it is a bit of a no-brainer. I think what's happened, Mike, is that car companies and oil companies are relatively close to government. I mean, I, without wishing to put too fine a point on it, we know that the zero emission vehicle mandate, we don't really like the word zero emission vehicle mandate because there's still emissions associated with making vehicles. Mm-hmm. But we do understand that if there's no emissions coming out of the exhaust pipe, that's fantastic. But that policy was designed to be quite ambitious, and it was set at 2030. And as you might have seen in recent months, it's been moved back to 2035. And we know it's on the public record that Toyota, for example, one of the top two car companies in the world, lobbied vociferously to the UK government to actually water down that policy. Oh. So I couldn't say there's brown envelopes, but there's certainly pressure, yeah.
Very serious lobbying. Absolutely. From private companies onto the government. That's okay. Maybe we should park that for the time being, because, you know, we don't want to get into too much trouble, but it will be fascinating to unpick that a little bit more at some point in the future, if it's possible. You mentioned some other electric things. Now, I've got to say, all this stuff, scooters, bikes, skateboards, Segways, I've even seen roller skates. I think they're fantastic. I've never tried one, I have to say, but I just love the idea of them. And I can see in the future they could be used a whole lot more. But so do you think they're a serious part of kind of city transport for the future, or just a bit of a menace that run people over?
I think they are quite a serious part of the future. I think we have to put it into context. I think the UK has a really strong car culture, so I think it's going to be quite difficult to get people out of their cars. You could see that with the pandemic. You know, for a brief moment in time, we all were forced to get out of our cars, and we all felt that electric bikes and micromobility was going to be the future. It certainly is part of the future, but we have to be kind of realistic to what extent. All you have to do, Mike, is go to Amsterdam or Utrecht to see that they're riding around in bikes, electric bikes, boards, scooters, skateboards, you can name it. Even lots of little mini cars, micro cars as well, and trikes and things like that. The advantage Amsterdam has, of course, is it tackled micromobility culturally in the 70s. So that's taken some time to get to that point. But when you go around cities like that, you can see it is possible. And right. Somewhere like
when you
London,
say micromobility culture, I mean they were kind of geared up for push bikes.
Yeah, they really, you know, really moved up to that in the 70s and 80s, and now they're at a point where, well, if you've been to Utrecht or Amsterdam, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. You're more likely to get run over by anything else. You know, that's how they travel. So I think places like London could actually be, you know, really fertile ground for these micromobility technologies. But again, it's about things like policy support and things like that as well. One of the things that I think is really important is how you kind of promote those products. And I have to say, when I first started promoting electric bikes to the audience on the Fully Charged show, we first started promoting it to people who come to our show, or even to my friends and family, people would say, well, it's just lazy to get an electric bike. And I would say, well, maybe, but I remember during the pandemic, my dad, who's in his 70s, never cycled anywhere. And suddenly he got an electric bike. He lives in quite a hilly part of the countryside. And suddenly he was on his bike constantly. So it wasn't just about young men who, you know, love cycling. It was about enabling access to cycling to other people. He had, you know, he could go up a steep hill near where he lived in no time at all, thanks to an electric bike, something he just couldn't do before. So we have to think in a bit more three-dimensional terms. These technologies are fantastic. And if we can get people out of cars into shared transport, public transport, into these smaller micromobility options, we should take that opportunity, because the logical conclusion is if we keep buying more and more cars, well, it will be absolute gridlock.
Well, it is already in many places.
Quite.
Yeah. All right. So at the show, can I come and try out some of these kind of scooters and bikes and skateboards, stuff like that, as well as a car?
Yeah, we have a two-wheel test track for micromobility. So we have an area you can come and do that. And again, because they're all electric, you can do it indoors. So no matter what the weather and everything electric London, you'll be able to test drive all those different technologies as well. It's great fun because lots of kids love to go around the track on their electric bikes, and you know, those electric balance bikes we had in Australia when we did the show there recently for youngsters, loads of other things. So yeah, it's really, really good. If you're looking at that type of technology, you can also get a few different rides and find out what you like, how much it costs, how it would fit into your life, how it charges, all that sort of thing. But yeah, we love doing that. We love having areas for people to try and test things.
Yeah, good. One thing that I've noticed on the I live in St Albans, just north of London, and my wife goes into London every day, and there's a big sign on the station door. It says no electric scooters. It's just electric scooters not allowed on the train, on the, and that seems like a real shame, because if they're like, they should be part of the whole commuting setup. It seems a bit of a shame. I don't know why they do that. Or maybe it's because of the, because there have been problems with fires with some of these things.
Yeah, I mean, it's like anything really, Mike. It's perception becomes reality quite quickly. Actually, the number of fires that you get in these products is actually quite low. But there's something of an irony going on. The government hasn't really encouraged these technologies. Therefore, it hasn't encouraged them. It hasn't put standards in place on these technologies. So therefore, what you actually find is some of the technologies that do come into the country aren't up to the standard they would be if they were built here, for example, if they were built in. So there's a bit of a catch-22 going on. But I would say, generally speaking, if you get an electric bike or electric scooter from a reputable manufacturer, you almost certainly won't have any issue. So I think that's just a case of councils being extremely cautious and abundance of caution on things like public transport. But I agree, you know, wouldn't it be fantastic? Like, people have got on their Brompton before, they've taken that on the train and they've got off at the other end of the cycle to their office, and the ability to do the same on, you know, an electric fold-up bike or electric scooter. I mean, that would be just fantastic. So there are huge benefits here. We're just in the stage where we're just figuring out how it all fits together, really. But I would just say to anyone listening, these technologies are generally great. They're very safe. And actually, they're really something to be excited about in the future.
Yeah, I think that might lead on nicely to we can dispel a few myths, or I can get you to dispel a few myths of, you know, and there are lots, aren't there, surrounding electric transport, particularly cars. You know, the first one, oh, electric vehicles, they all blow up, don't they? I'm not getting one of them.
Yeah, that's one that you will see from time to time. It's actually become more of a story in the last couple of years. In the old days, Mike, it was the cars can't go far enough. Well, they can now, or they're too expensive. Well, that is also getting solved. I agree that there's still quite a lot of more expensive ones out, but the cost of running them is actually very, very cheap, and there are cheaper and cheaper cars coming. So the EVs catch on fire story has been you know, a big one for the Daily Mail et al. Over the last year or so. The truth is that electric car is 19 times less likely to catch fire than a combustion engine vehicle in the first place. The issue, of course, is if it does catch fire, if it goes into thermal runaway, which is not guaranteed, so even the fires I've mentioned, they don't necessarily happen, then it can be quite difficult to put out. So we're working with you know, fire safety experts at the moment in Australia and in the UK and other countries. But what's not known there is that the new technologies that are coming along, and I'm going to get slightly technical here, and I apologize in advance, there's new battery chemistries coming along, things like LFP, which is lithium iron phosphate, and sodium ion batteries, that are almost impossible to set on fire. They are orders of magnitude safer. So now Tesla, for example, over half of the cars they're making have this LFP, lithium iron phosphate batteries within them, and they are much, 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 much safer. So again, the car fire thing has been completely overblown, no pun intended, and actually the cars are very, very safe, but actually they're only going to get safer and safer over the next few years.
You did mention something that I just want to ask what it is. Thermal runaway?
Thermal runaway, basically, when I guess, you know, in short terms, the battery just gets so hot, basically, kind of all the cells kind of combust. And that, you know, we actually, that does happen occasionally, but it really is a much smaller percentage issue than tabloids might want you to believe. You know, these kind of sensationalist headlines, they get clicks, don't they? And they get people to pick up the papers, and that's why they tend to run those stories. So I would say, I mean, I know of electric car drivers, I literally know thousands, because we have the YouTube channel, because we have the events. I have never met anyone who's actually had an electric car fire in real life, ever. So it really is, the chances are extremely low.
That's good to know. Right, next myth to dispel. Batteries just degrade very fast. You know, you buy a new car, it says it will do 200 miles, 6 months later it does 50 or 100 or something.
Yeah, I think Jeremy Clarkson is to blame for this one. Sorry, Mr. Clarkson, but I think he originally kind of, there were some early batteries in cars like the Nissan Leaf, the Generation 1 Nissan Leaf, which is about, I think, about 12, 13 years old now as a car. that would degrade relatively quickly. We've had a secondhand Nissan Leaf. I think it had done about 100,000 miles and it had lost maybe 15, 20% of its range. So not huge. We were still able to use it. It was fine. But actually the modern day cars, the modern day electric cars, the batteries might degrade by maybe 3 to 6, 7% over the course of their lifetime. But when you're talking about a 300 mile range car, that's actually a very, very small diminishment. And the reality is these cars will go much, much further. We recently filmed a Tesla down in Sydney that had done over 500,000 miles on one battery. So actually battery electric vehicles are going to probably outlast combustion engine vehicles, not the other way around. And combustion engine vehicles get less and less efficient over time as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've got an old clunker and it doesn't feel as efficient when you're driving it. Okay, so that's not very scientific, but actually it takes more fuel to go the same distance. Certainly I have noticed that. All right, next myth. In the cold, they don't go anywhere. They, you know, the distance, the range is dramatically reduced when it's kind of 0 degrees or less.
So the UK is obviously getting slightly milder, ironically, but the best places to look for stories about this are Canada and North America. We do a lot of work in America. We do a lot of work in Canada. There are some fantastic stories of people getting trapped in those big kind of apocalyptic ice storms you get in Canada, where they've been able to actually sit in a Tesla, for example, for sort of 48 hours and actually sit there in comfort, no problem. And the car will run, you know, run the heating system with the heated seats and actually be a much more pleasant place. They can watch Netflix and their Tesla at the same time while they're trapped in the ice storm as well. So actually, I would say it's a much better place to be than a combustion engine vehicle. In terms of the range, if you're just driving around in winter, it can diminish. In some less sophisticated electric cars, you could lose 20 to 30% of the range in the deepest, coldest, wintry conditions. But others are much, much better. I haven't always driven a Tesla. I don't want to lump myself in with a Tesla-only crowd, but I have got one now, and it's very efficient, even in the winter. The range really only comes down by sort of 5 or 10% in the depths of winter. So, again, these batteries are getting better and better, and things like LFP, which I've mentioned, lithium iron phosphate and sodium iron, actually are going to be even better in colder climates as well. So, again, it is a myth, frankly.
And what about the other end of the scale, when it's really, really hot, 30 degrees?
Yeah, good question. Yeah, no problem in 30 degrees. I believe there were some problems in the US when they had over sort of 45 degrees. They had some problem with the charging networks. I think there was a bit of an issue with, you know, the chargers not working in those sort of conditions. But no, we've go to the US, as I say, to California, to Texas. We've done shows in Sydney as well. We've not heard of any reports with problems of, in extreme heat either.
And how about your AC when it's hot? Will that, if you put the AC on, will that change the range dramatically?
Honestly, it can have quite a big impact, but it depends what car you've got. The Tesla Model 3 I have now has a heat pump. So the heat pump actually does the work. Heat pumps are normally about 300, 400% efficient. I can't speak to the heat pump efficiency in a Tesla because I haven't taken it apart, but that's doing your heating and your cooling for you. In fact, it's taking the air in and actually just moving that air around and making it warmer. So I actually, on the new Tesla I've got with a heat pump, that even we've got aircon on full blast, it really makes little difference. There are some other cars where I definitely have felt in winter, Mike, that if I put the heating on to high level, it will impact the range. So that there's some truth in that, but it just depends on what car you get, really.
Okay, all right. You mentioned heat pumps. I want in the time we got left, move on a little bit to other electric products that are going to be at the show, of which I think there are probably quite a few. So away from transport, really to our homes and keeping them comfortable, either warm or cooling them. Are there going to be heat pumps on display or people to talk to about heat pumps?
There will. There's an energy advice zone. There's lots of live talks and sessions as well. We cover home energy, electric vehicles. So there's lots of education, fun education, I should say, to kind of listen into. But there's an energy advice zone where you can go and talk about your own property. because actually switching from a petrol car to electric car is actually really easy. Once you've done it once, you'll wonder what the fuss was about. But changing your home, making it more energy efficient, you know, sorting your bills out, perhaps even generating your own heat and power, that is a little bit more complicated because everyone's house is so different. So we've got a one-to-one surgery where people can come along and they can talk to experts about that. So the home of 2030, 2035, 2040, we think will be filled with quite a lot of different tech to what we have now. Typically now, over 90% of UK inhabitants have a gas boiler. Over time, that number will plummet, as it has in Europe already. And we're also reliant on our power. We get our power from the grid. So new technology. So we're used to that, aren't we? A combination of boiler and pylons bringing power to our house. That's how we've typically run things. But going forward, it really will be about electrification. It will be ways you can create your own power, ways you can create your own heat. Maybe you can store your own power and heat as well. And the heat pump is going to be one of the bigger, more popular technologies over the next few years, certainly.
You said creating your own power. You're talking about solar panels there?
Well, solar is a great way to do that. So solar PV, there's about 1 million households in the UK now with solar PV. That's solar photovoltaics. That will increase. Even in the UK, you can still do quite well out of solar. A lot of people, Mike, will pair that with a battery. So they can actually fill that full of electrons, you know, when the sun shines, and then they can store that energy and use it at a time where energy is more expensive. You can even fill up the battery off the grid as well overnight on a cheaper energy tariff and use that battery to, you know, power your appliances during the day when they're more expensive as well. So if we were asked which technology we think will do best out of the next few years, we would definitely say solar, batteries, electrification of heat, which is heat pumps, could be air source heat pumps, which are those kind of cassette units that sit outside the perimeter of a building. Could be the ground source heat pumps, which go down with boreholes into the garden. Could be infrared heating. There's a new technology out there called a zero emission boiler, which is quite exciting. There are things like, you know, smart water tanks now, which can use software to make sure you maximize the use of your thermal storage in your energy storage portfolio. And also, once people have a battery on their driveway as well, if they're lucky enough to have a driveway, that will also change things a little bit, because with vehicle to grid and vehicle to load, your car might act as a battery. 95% of the time at the moment, our car sits there unused.
Sure.
It's an asset that's unused. But if it's a battery as well, it could be doing all sorts of things to help you out in event of a power cut, to make your energy use cheaper, even firming up the grid at times where the grid needs to take in cheaper power as well. So that the vehicle connection between home and motor will be a significant factor.
Yeah, that's very interesting, isn't it? There's a bit of a flaw, which I'm sure people have asked you about previously, though. An awful lot of people live in flats, and, you know, so you might have 10 dwellings with one roof. Okay, who gets to stick the solar panels on top, and that kind of thing? And if you've got a heat pump, a ground source heat pump, you know, people don't have gardens. You know, how does this work with living in flats?
Well, the way it's been portrayed so far is, you know, it's gas boiler versus heat pump. And we would urge people to take a step back and understand that it's actually gas versus electrification.
Right.
Electrification is, and I'm going to use a cliche here, is a bit of a Swiss Army knife. There's lots of different types of technologies. The heat pump will work for a lot of people, probably more people than most realize. But there are other things. So, for example, I went to a fantastic tower block in Sunderland about 4 years ago. And I think it was one of, 8 tower blocks. And they had ripped out every single boiler in the whole place. This was not long after Grenfell, Mike. So part of the driver was actually around safety. And what they did instead underneath all these tower blocks is they put in a huge ground source loop that fed into all the properties. And the properties then had a heat battery in the property instead. And they actually managed to pull out, I think it was 364 boilers in this project, and replace them with new technology.
Wow.
So they mentioned there's things like infrared heating, which is a kind of infrared panels, which put heat out, and they're very good for, you know, smaller properties. You know, they're just wall mounted or ceiling mounted. And then there's new technologies coming through, things like the zero emission boiler. So in the old days in flats, it's history repeating itself. I know in tenement blocks in Scotland, they used to have a lot of energy, night storage heating. You'll be familiar with that. I've heard of that. You know, they would actually basically charge up off the Economy 7 tariff overnight. They'd put the electricity into what effectively was bricks, thermal bricks within a night storage heater. And then they would slow release that heat over the day. Well, now there's zero emission boilers that basically very modern, very up-to-date, software-driven versions of the same technology, which are quite small, and they can replace a boiler. So there are actually a lot of different electrification options, and it really depends on what property. But there's definitely no reason why people who live in flats should be left out. But it might not be. They might not be having solar on their roof. It might be a different set of technologies. Yeah.
Interesting. This all hinges on having enough clean electricity, because all of a sudden, well, not all of a sudden, if we've all been our gas boilers, we're going to need another source of energy, probably electric. So there's going to be, it all kind of hinges on enough clean electricity generated and then transported around the grid to the right places. Is the infrastructure in place for that to happen? Can it be? What's the situation with that?
Well, we work very, very closely with the National Grid. The National Grid would describe themselves as the kind of the tubes that basically take the power around the country. They don't necessarily do the generating bit. They certainly don't do the usage, but they enable it to the power to get across the country. They are very, very relaxed about this energy transition. They do future energy scenarios all the time. They've been modelling this for many years. And in fact, the amount of electricity we use now is actually significantly down due to the introduction of better lighting, better bulbs, for example, and for more efficiencies ever. So there is headroom in the current system. But what you've got to imagine is, if, Mike, I said to you that every single house in the UK was going to have a heat pump overnight, that would be problematic. But we don't face that cliff edge. We can probably only install, maybe at peak, it's going to be hard to install more than 1 million, 2 million a year, which is similar to the amount of boilers. So we do actually have quite a long runway, therefore, to make sure the National Grid and all the connecting elements of the system work in line. So quite often people like to spread fear factor, like it's all going to happen tomorrow and the power's going to go off. But there's some extremely clever minds working at National Grid and other companies around the world that will enable this transition. But having things like the ability to generate our own energy is obviously a big bonus, right? Because if we do have the ability to have solar PV, for example, then we can actually lessen some of that burden on the grid. Equally, that's why heat pumps are so popular, because they are often 300, 400 times efficient compared to a gas boiler, which might be 90% efficient. So actually, again, that's why there's a big pump push around heat pumps, because the reality is that they actually need less energy. So we're very confident that there's a way through this, and don't take it from us. National Grid have gone on the record about this many, many times.
Okay. We talk of all this technology, the cars, the transport, heating, all just sort of kicking off and bubbling. It feels to me like we're kind of at a almost, I don't know if this sounds too grand, a pivotal moment in history, electric history. Does it feel the same to you?
It does feel the same to us. But I've been talking about these sorts of technologies for 21 years. So it feels like a big moment. It is a big moment, but obviously I'm slightly impatient, because I've been talking about heat pumps and solar panels and latterly electric cars for a long, long time. Equally, the frustration, Mike, is that a lot of these technologies were invented and pioneered in the late 1800s. So they've been around quite a long time. But what's happening now is it's becoming about economies. Batteries have become cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. Solar has become cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, as has wind power as well. ultimately economics will win. And once you get that kind of momentum and those kind of tipping points, what will happen is that electrification will just simply is already and will simply just become economically the best choice for people who operate car fleets that want to get electric vehicles, or businesses that want to keep the lights on, they'll choose renewables, et cetera, et cetera. So we're at that point now. Mm. And actually what we're seeing is a very, very fast deployment of these technologies. And it's a bit of a patchwork quilt. Some countries are more progressive than others. And as I would say, at the moment, the UK is probably getting a bit of a C minus. But if you look at other countries are doing better than us. And that's why I would say it's so important that the UK embraces this and stops fighting it, because actually the jobs of the future are here. We often talk about artificial intelligence now as well. That's a huge, huge topic. And that has some positive ramifications. But also, I find it quite scary, not least for what jobs will my kids do? Well, I would say to any young person listening, if you want a job for life, find out if you could fit a heat pump in the future. We might have to put in 1 million or 2 million of those a year for 2 or 3 decades, you know, and therefore that is a job that no machine will easily be able to do. So nice. There's some huge opportunities here. We've just announced a new battery factory down in Somerset, which is owned by Tata, the Indian company that owns Jaguar Land Rover. That itself is going to create 4,000 jobs. You know, there is opportunity here. But if we're outside of the window looking in at other countries benefiting from all this technology, I think we're going to regret it, unfortunately.
Okay. Very interesting. Lots to think about, lots to see, certainly lots to see at your Everything Electric. So remind us just one more time where it is, when it is, and how we can get tickets.
Yes, so Everything Electric London takes place at the Excel Centre in London. You can get there easily now along the Elizabeth line. It takes 60 minutes from Reading, 40 minutes from Heathrow, 20 minutes from Central London. You can drop down from Paddington into Central London to get to Excel. It's much, much easier to get to these days. The exhibition takes place on Thursday the 28th, Friday the 29th, and Saturday the 30th of March. And you can get tickets from everythingelectric.show. Just Google it and you'll find us for sure.
Excellent. Excellent. Fantastic. Right, Dan, I will be there.
Great. I can't wait to see you there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat.
Yeah, my pleasure, mate.
Thank you very much to my guest, Dan Caesar, telling us all about the Everything Electric show, which is coming up in London at the end of March. Do remember that if you fancy coming, it's over 3 days. There's loads of great stuff to see. You can get a free pair of tickets. In fact, there are 5 pairs of tickets available. All you have to do to get those is send me an email, mike@relaxbackuk.com. The first 5 I receive will get a pair of tickets each. Thank you very much for listening and have a healthy week. Until next week.
Thanks for listening to the Relax Back UK show. Join me, Mike Dilk, again next week for more fascinating interviews and chat. If you're listening to the podcast version, please subscribe, like, and share it with your family and friends. And have a healthy week. Until next week.